Thanks for tuning in to the Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. For guest bookings, questions, or comments, you can email us at info@thetomorrowshow.com. Be sure to follow us on social media and tell a friend about the show. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, your voice of tomorrow, wishing you a better one.
In studio at the Tomorrow Show with us. Look at you, you've got millennials all swaying and excited.
You have an amazing voice.
Thank you. We recorded all of this. This is my band that I tour around the world with. And we cut it all live. I came at the very little overdubbing you hear is me and Craig J, my arranged producer. He and I did background parts on it, and all the rest of it's live.
And this is the band you tour with?
Yes, they're amazing.
So they can turn on to rock when you want to do your rock stuff.
And I do blues stuff, too.
That's what I'm saying. I hear jazz in this.
Oh, they're all like prodigies. They're the best band I've ever worked with. Seriously. And they've been with me for 15 years all over the world. Yeah. Amazing players. I'm blessed to be able to play with them.
Yeah. I mean, you hear it. And obviously, I know you were saying earlier how your fans wanted the Christmas album.
Yeah, for decades.
It just seems logical.
They've been asking me for decades, fans all over the world, like, when are you doing a Christmas album? And it wasn't until maybe it was 9 months ago or so. I can't remember. I want to say last year, but we were out on the road, and Craig J., who produced this in my last CD about 4 or 5 years ago, when we had CDs. This is on DavidCassidyMusic.com and DavidCassidy.com and obviously iTunes. It's just all downloading. And that's the way the world is now.
That's it.
Yeah. As we know.
That is the new world that
it
we're
is.
In. I mean, we were talking earlier, and, these are children here. You know, they're all in their early
children.
20s. And to veterans like you and I. And I said, and they said, God, he was like the Justin Bieber. I said, that's exactly. And I gave them some perspective, David. Mm. You know, a couple of days ago, I went and saw, last week, I saw Snoop perform.
Uh-huh.
And there were 7,000 people there, and it was sold out, and it was fantastic. Just to give you guys some perspective, David would, there were weekends he would sell to 50, 60,000 people. I mean, just to give you perspective, so just so you understand why I'm so excited to sit with this guy and what you're sitting with.
Mm.
So, David,
you're
can
just
you...
sitting with an old, tired guy who loves to play and sing.
But can you speak to that?
Yeah,
please.
Sure. Well, I started my very first professional job. As a professional, I moved here from New York, where I was born, and both my parents, Jack Cassidy and Evelyn Ward, were in the theater and lived in New York. I was born in New York and raised there until
by your grandparents, right?
Well, my mom and dad split up when I was about 4 or 5, and I moved with my mom from Manhattan, where I was born and spent my first 4 or 5 years, to my grandparents in West Orange, New Jersey. And I lived there until the 5th grade, and my mom and I moved out to L.A., and I spent the 60s here, it was so incredible to live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, can you speak to that? Because
I could speak to it.
It's a different world.
It's not the same planet at all. It's not the same planet. The entire planet is completely different. The culture, everything you look and you see is completely different. Other than a few of the fantastic original old Hollywood, their apartment buildings. I've been all over L.A.
But most of them are – we were talking earlier. You lived in this neighborhood that we're in.
Yeah. I lived 1 minute from here. Yeah.
And we were talking about the neighborhood having John Wayne and Aretha Franklin, and I was mentioning to you all their house. They just knock
it
right down. That's right. Their house is still here.
I don't know. But yeah. I lived where I lived in the 70s was – we were just talking about it, but here in Encino, where we are, I had a house that I moved into the first year of the Partridge Family, And it was an acre and three quarters. It had an orange grove. It had a little shed and a little corral. And it was right next to the largest undeveloped piece of land that was 9 acres of oranges and all the rest of it. I had a guest house, a pool, and my own house that was built in 27 or 28, wow. 1928.
I wonder if it's even still there.
A good part of the house is. It was the first house to sell for $1 million in the valley. That's what the real estate agent told me.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, I moved to Montecito up in Santa Barbara and for a couple of years. And I've been living either in New York, and I lived in Las Vegas, obviously, for...
For work.
6 years. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And in New York for Broadway, et cetera.
Going back to the 60s, how did...
As a teenager, before I became professional.
Right. You know, I know because of... The real big hit came in 70 with Partridge.
71.
What, did any crossover with the Manson family or the Mansons? I mean, just saying, what was it like back? Because it felt like to me that was the end of the peace and love out here.
I don't think it was at all.
No?
No. I think there was a great awareness of what the kind of ultra-violence that took place in that event. If we look around what's going on in the world today... That was a very kind, peaceful environment, especially here in L.A., that, I mean, I can tell you the artists. I saw Hendrix 4 times. I went and saw. Now, I'm a teenager.
Yeah, I like you. This is fandom talk, because later in the interview, I want to get to the fact that the people he's collaborated with or jammed with musically. But tell me, as a teenager, you went to see Hendrix?
4 times.
Jesus.
And I saw the last two concerts that were recorded. I saw one of the last two concerts at the Santa Monica Civic of Clapton and Cream, of which his legendary, incredible live, it's his, I don't know, I guess it's his badge, which they also recorded, it was Crossroads that he did live. And you know, he has a Crossroads, which is for people who are dealing with underprivileged and also dealing with addiction. And he's a great proponent of that and has an addiction center down in Florida where I live. Wow. And, yeah, he's an amazing human being and an incredibly influential guy. And anyway, I saw them. I met B.B. King after seeing him. I've told this story a few times.
And you're still not, but you're still not at this point.
I'm still a teenager.
You're still a teenager.
Not professional. Okay. I'm still playing in like bad garage blues bands and still, you know, everybody wanted me to come and be the singer. And I was always that guy and either the rhythm or lead guitar player. But I never did that seriously and thought I would pursue a career in recording or in the music business. I started working with the L.A. Theater Company.
But you had an idea about acting from your dad, right? Your dad...
An idea about acting?
That you were going to, right? You were going to be...
I knew from the time I was 3 and a half that I knew what I was going to do, and I did exactly what my mother and father told me. In the cab, on the afternoon, I went to a matinee. My dad was starring in a show called Wish You Were Here. I was 3 and a half, and we took a taxi after my dad. I saw my dad on the stage. My mom also was an actress who actually starred on Broadway and was in 20 shows. But my father did over 40 Broadway shows.
There's your dad.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Estes. Oh, yeah. There is my handsome dad. And he was an incredible artist. He was so talented in so many areas that it's a wonderful thing to know that I inherited, as did my brother Sean and my brother Patrick and my brother Ryan, aspects of his genius.
His gifts.
He was like the most gifted human being, I think, or one of the four or five most gifted human beings I've ever met.
Really?
In my life, yeah. He was also bipolar, also manic depressive, and alcoholic. So you put those three fabulous...
Is it? Did I read that he turned down the role of Ted Baxter in Mary Tyler Moore?
You're
Come on.
Right. Nope. And wow. He would have...
Why?
He...
Just TV was beneath it? Was it that kind of thing where he was a Broadway guy, a theater guy?
Yeah. He was actually deciding whether or not he should go and do this musical on Broadway or take that role. And he thought the role was too small because he had already won a Tony Award on Broadway.
Wow, look at the picture side by side. That's crazy.
Yeah, he did. And he was offered the role, and then they hired him.
There's
BB.
There's BB. Do you recall, were there regrets from your dad? Do you recall from not accepting a massive role like that?
Yeah, I think he...
I mean, it would have put him on your level.
Yeah.
You know, I mean fame-wise.
For me, he was so talented, and he would have owned that like nobody else. Not criticizing the actor that ended up doing it, but tonight, you know, on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, that was such an incredible role for my dad. Anyway, he chose to do a Broadway show that failed.
Did he regret it later in life, though?
I think it haunted him. And I think when you miss an opportunity like that, and you know you owned it, that I think somewhere in the back of his mind and in his heart, he felt like a fool. He couldn't stand to be wrong. And I think it started making him crazier and drinking more and more and more, and tortured him. He was a tortured man.
Well, from watching your movie and reading your books, it appeared that way.
Yeah. I mean, I was really blessed to have Malcolm McDowell, who I love and I've known since 1978, something like that. Incredible actor, incredible guy. Play my father in the David Cassidy
story. Yeah, he was great.
He was amazing. He is amazing.
I wondered, did he know your dad? I bet you he had met him.
No. No, he had never met my dad, but knew of my father's work. Like, I've talked to so many gifted actors that over the decades since my dad was gone, and before, of course, but Christopher Walken said he was like my idol. I wanted to be on Broadway, like in the theater.
Like Jack Cassidy.
Be like Jack Cassidy. He said that to me, like, we're hanging out after, while I was doing Blood Bears on Broadway. We met, I think it was for Mike Nichols, but love Christopher
Amazing
Walken.
Director. Did Michael Nichols?
It was for him and a birthday party or something like that.
But he mentioned it. I see that, you know, seeing the difference with you and your daughter, you know, I could see the love that you had for her on The Apprentice mm-hmm. and how proud you were as a dad. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a juxtaposition between your dad feelings towards you and your feelings toward her. Can you speak to that? I mean,
I could speak to it as much as I love and appreciate who she is and where she's come from. I didn't raise her. I'm very proud of her, and she's a terrific actress. I have had nothing to do with her career.
But you're proud, though.
Oh, I'm very proud.
Whereas your dad, it seemed he resented the...
I'm really proud of her. And also, I mean, my son, who I did raise,
Bo,
who is incredibly gifted. And his mother, my ex-wife, Sue, great, great creative, really good songwriter, excellent singer, and... You know, my whole family on both sides are so musical.
So talented, but seems like the difference is, you know, where, and I've seen this out here, and we've talked about it on the show before, where I've seen parents of famous parents have children who eclipse their fame, and they're jealous or competitive, and that confuses me, but I also, it appeared that way with your dad.
My father was tortured by my fame. He was tortured by my success. I mean, even Shirley, who I was working with, who he was married to, my stepmother, she told me on the set, she said, "Your father's not coping with this well at all. He had an incident, apparently, with my manager, who was just an awesome person."
Yeah, you're very instrumental in your success.
Most definitely.
Wow.
Her name was Ruth Ahrens, and she had them to dinner, and my father went insane at her home, broke two chairs, screamed and yelled, and then, of course, stormed out and left Shirley there. And I know of a few incidents, but Shirley came and confided with me and said, "Your father's really not dealing with your incredible success and your fame." And, he resented my success, but he was proud of me and my talent that I was able to do it and that I was able to make a living as a professional since I was 18, as an actor, as a singer, as a songwriter, as a creator, producer, et cetera, et
and he
cetera.
And I believe he said to you, and I think of this myself too, and it's good for you guys
to
hear. You two guys together.
It was the first time we were in New York together. I just graduated high school about 2 weeks.
Look at the smiles are the same.
2 weeks before, yeah. That's we do.
Wow.
A lot of people say I look a lot like him now.
Yeah. He had said something to you, your talent will never leave you.
Correct. Well, yeah. What he actually said is talent is the only commodity that will survive. Talent will survive. All the other stuff, you can get a hit show or you could have like a once in a lifetime, number one record or an album. But the only thing that lasts, that is the commodity, is the talent. And it's all about, he also said to me, "David, I want you to know I've never taken a job for money. Even when I was broke, I did the work. And if you do the good work and you choose the right or you create the right projects for you, either as a singer or songwriter or musician or as an actor," he came and saw me and backstage before I performed at Madison Square Garden. And he was so proud of me, but yet Shirley told me this after a while. She said, "We were watching and from a crow's nest up there and with security around us because everybody knew her and obviously my dad. But he made a comment to her like, 'I could never have imagined that my son could have been as world famous and successful as he's become. This is truly like nothing I've ever seen or heard.'" And it almost made me cry. I was filled with conflict about it. And as the years went on, I didn't talk to my father the last 6, 7, 8 months of his life before he died tragically in that fire. And it's because he just couldn't cope with my fame and success. And as I told you before, the idea of him passing up that role and in the Mary Tyler Moore Show and doing what Ted Knight did and was, I think that along with a couple of other tragedies, his alcoholism got heavier and worse, as it does for all of us addicts. I just happen to be lucky to be sober now. Right. And it's a blessing. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gotten the creative fire to go back in and start recording again. And anyway, I think it all transpired quite quickly, like within a year, he divorced Shirley, or she divorced him. Right. He moved out, and I don't know, his career wasn't going the way he wanted it to. Yeah, he went and did another Broadway show shortly after, which failed. Not his fault.
Right.
But I think all of it was, I think it was his emotional lack of stability and finding joy and happiness in life, in just life.
It was just all about the work.
For him, he was obsessed.
Obsessed with the work.
And he taught me and my brother Sean, my brother Patrick and Ryan, the work ethic, which
you've been a workhorse since. Mm-hmm. I was telling these guys, you know, when you think of Judy Garland, how she had to work, and I think you were later generations of it. I feel like we now know how to manage a child star in a transition into,
I was never a child star.
I mean, a teen star.
Yeah.
But we know how to manage it and bring it along. We didn't know back then. So it was just like push.
I did, because I, having been around it with my dad and my mom and Shirley, like, I didn't become a professional until 1968. I was 2 weeks out of high school. I was 18. I got my first job like 9 months later, and it closed, and I was fortunate enough to get
TV acting roles, right?
Well, the casting director, after my Broadway show closed, he flew me out to do a real screen test on film, as we used to do.
Yeah, back in the day.
And he showed it to a couple other casting directors. And I did, like, Bonanza, Ironsides, Marcus Welby, Mod Squad, all of those really great hour dramas that right. were on. I particularly loved working with Dan Blocker, who played Haas.
Oh, yeah, Bonanza.
He's such an amazing guy. So talented.
Man.
And so funny. I mean, what a guy. And also working with Robert Young from the years of him being a movie star and then starring in Father Knows Best.
And then Marcus Welby.
But what an actor. He sent me, as an actor who, I can't even tell you, he sent me a personal handwritten letter after I was, you know, on his show. And I just couldn't believe
that's amazing.
Someone of that stature who had been doing that since the late 1930s, early 40s, and of that stature would take the time, because I was in the infantile part.
Yeah.
I was 19 years old.
Right. And you weren't David Cassidy.
No.
In the term.
I was just a guy. I had to go in and read and audition like everybody else.
So you ended up working on the Partridge Family with unbelievably talented people. Do you have memories of some of the recurring guests that you had on?
Many.
Jodie Foster, I know, was a little kid at the time.
Any
memories?
She had it.
Really?
You could just tell she had it. Oh, yeah. I mean, amazing amount of talent that was on that show. It's so hard to, you know, I...
What about Richard Pryor?
He was my favorite guest star of all the people that did it. Incredible talents. Richard and I hung together.
Oh my God.
In my trailer and his trailer, and he was playing all this fantastic stuff. And a guy who became my like personal photographer that I took around the world touring with me took his cover of his comedy album. And to me, he was the most unbelievable, imaginative comedian.
Was he funny, too? Was he making you laugh in that trailer?
Oh, nonstop. Nonstop. But he was such an artist. You could feel it just being
like
around.
You got him at it. That's his, like...
This was before he became really a big star.
Right.
He was just starting to become what Richard Pryor became. And he was just also Lou Gossett. Lou Gossett Jr.
was on the show.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, both of them were on the show. And it was just so amazing to work with actors like that and professionals and inspirational people.
Do you remember Mark Hamill? Do you remember working with him?
I remember Mark. Mark came and did he had a small role on the show. And I remember we hung out a little bit together, and I don't know, for some reason they made him park out, like a half a mile away. I said, come on, Mark, get in the car. And this is right before he auditioned for Star Wars.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, very cool guy. Very cool. Good actor. He was a serious actor as I began.
Who I feel is so underrated and we don't hear enough about him was Dave Madden.
Oh, boy.
Reuben Kincaid.
Such a sweetheart of a guy. And yeah, we don't hear. Although there are a lot of people, they don't call him Dave Madden. They go, oh, man, how cool was Reuben Kincaid?
You're right. As a character,
yeah.
He's the quintessential manager.
Yeah,
dating the flight attendants and the stewardesses,
exactly.
Excuse me.
No, correct. They were stewardesses at the time. Now, if you say that to a female flight attendant, they look at you and cock their head and go, excuse me? I'm sorry, was that politically incorrect?
He was
what
made it look
sweet
easy.
Man. What a really kind, caring, sweet man he
Did
was.
Did you remain in touch with him?
No. Uh-huh. I take that back. I was performing in South Florida. I was doing an outdoor concert. God, it must be 10 years ago. At Gulfstream Park, the racetrack, and also they did live concerts of music. And Dave and his wife came, and I think he brought his daughter as well. I've kept in touch with Danny.
Right.
Danny Bonaducci, for decades now. I love him, and as we're talking off the air, he's so talented, and he's got his life so together.
It's interesting, too, because you were at least a young adult, but he was really a kid. It's really hard to to see if the talent will transition up, and it did.
It did. Again, talent will survive, and Danny is – I actually had him open for me.
Yeah,
he had never done stand-up, ever. And he opened for me, I think we were in Atlantic City the first time. I took him on tour with me for 3 weeks or something. And he was really not in great shape at that time. And he got his act together. I don't want to go into all the details.
No, it's fine.
But I love him. He is like my little brother, and I would do anything for him. I really would.
I think you're always going to be connected.
Well, we should be, because, it's not just that we worked and became really, really famous and successful doing a, legendary classic show all over the world. It's that he was, I don't want to reveal a whole lot, but he was abused by his father.
Yeah, yeah, tough.
I mean, he would come in sometimes and have a black eye in the morning. Yeah. We're talking about a 12-year-old kid, 11, 12 years old. His father was so resentful of his success. There we are together. Yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Love that. No, I love working with him. I love being not just on stage or doing television or anything. I just love. He cares about me, and I care about him.
I mean, what would happen when you'd see the black eye? I mean, what do you do?
Well,
you're 19. You're a kid.
I'm on tour. I'm gone. But Dave Madden would take him home and let him spend the weekend. Shirley would, because he was the same age as Sean. And all of us. Susan Day even did that, just to keep him safe and, keep him
from. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, he was really abused.
He doesn't talk a lot about it.
I can tell you that.
Susan Day? Have you talked to her since? I mean, I haven't seen her really since L.A. Law.
That was in the '80s.
Yeah.
The last time any of us from the show, from the Partridge Family, or anyone I know, the last time I saw her or spoke with her was 1990.
We did,
I think it was the MTV Awards.
I remember you sat next to each other.
Yeah, I love her. I truly loved her. She's a terrific actress and a wonderful human being. And I think she has not, there we are together. Yeah. That was it. That's 1990. And yeah, how wild is that? She's beautiful.
Gorgeous girl.
Yeah, she is. I think she has retired, I believe. Nobody, I don't know a human being that has seen or talked with her since, I think Shirley said she saw her in the mid-90s.
That was it.
Yeah, I don't know. She married an older producer, really great guy, who was like 15, 20 years older than her. And, you know.
I think sometimes, too, this, I've seen it before, just sometimes people just pack it up and go away. You know, they just want to go away.
I think she sort of got to that part. I think so. I don't know, but she's made no effort whatsoever to be connected with the Partridge Family.
Right.
She made no effort. We've done, like, on the Today Show and I think even Good Morning America and The Tonight Show. You know, there have been a few times that people have wanted to see us together.
Of course, we all do.
And she just wasn't.
You know, it's hard when you think of. I'm always fascinated by some of these bands, like the Rolling Stones, or that they're able to stay together, but or even The Who. And they don't like each other. So, you know, and
there are a lot of cases like that.
Right, yeah, and it's something and I know for us, we're on the outside, so we don't get it. We're on the outside, we don't get it. We just say to ourselves, hey, come on, you guys came together, you made magic, and by contributing to one another, all their lives were changed for a positive. Mm.
Ego, money, resentment. It's my band, no, it's his band. And, you know, this guy's of that, and that guy's of this, and I don't want to do this with you guys anymore. I mean, there are all kinds of different stories, but I know a lot, a lot.
So speaking of which, the granddaddy of them all, so take me over to you, your experiences first with John Lennon.
Yeah. Well, I became a musician. I could always sing. I was always the leader in school. We had what was choir, and I was always the lead singer in church, of which when I was a kid in New Jersey. And when I saw the Beatles on a Sunday night, Ed Sullivan aired, I'd never seen anything quite like it. I love music. I love pop music. I used to read albums, who were the writers, who were the producers. And I became very knowledgeable about that in the early 60s. In 63, they came over, and the first time they were on television, and the first time I had ever seen them or heard them, the hair in the back of my neck stood up. I had goosebumps all over my arms. I was just electrified by John, Paul, George, and Ringo. The next day, my mom took me. I begged her. I said, Mom, because I came from an all-musical family, and everybody played an instrument. My grandmother was a piano teacher. I lived with her. Anyway, I won't go into it. All of my uncles and everybody all played music, let alone my father and my mother. So she took me to a guitar store, a music store, and I bought my first electric guitar, and I learned how to play by listening to the radio and also buying their 45s and their first album, Meet the Beatles. And I'd practice and practice and practice, and I just sang along with them and played along or tried for what seems like at least 2 or 3 years. And obviously, as being a teenager in Southern California, in L.A., in the 60s, when it was just exploding, the music business, the artists were exploding because of their individuality. You know, I mean, if I tell you that there were so few lawyers and how do we describe them? The CEOs were all legendary artists, songwriters, music men. They weren't lawyers, guns, and money.
Like today.
Like today. So, or like, you know, the last 25, 30 years.
But John Lennon, weren't you able to meet with John?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing thing. We had a mutual friend. I met him first briefly at our mutual friend's house. And he then came over to my house shortly after that on New Year's Eve. It was 74, 75. And I'd just come off this, like, world tour of playing stadiums, really, just mostly stadiums. And it was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 months long. And I said, that's it. I'm stopping. I'm not doing this anymore for a while at least.
Right.
And John came over to my house with our mutual friend. And he came over. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. Interestingly enough, Susan Day was there. It was New Year's Eve. And John came over as we had already met. I said, come on, let's go into my music room and play some music. And we were both... we were quite intoxicated, okay. Both of us. Okay, 1 o'clock in the morning in 1975, and really, you know, in our cups, as they say. And we started playing guitar and singing together. And I, of course, went instantly into the early Beatles songs, the early, early Beatles songs, and he had forgotten them. Like, he hadn't played them in a decade. So I retaught him.
Do you remember the song?
Mm-hmm. Please, Please Me. Yeah, I retaught him. And I had just recorded, I had made a live album that a year before called Cassidy Live at Wembley. I think it was at Wembley Stadium. But anyway, I had recorded Please, Please Me. So I knew the song.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. Anyway, we became friends, and I got to know Yoko quite well, loved her. Every time he came out to L.A., I would see him. We'd have dinner together.
So he respected your abilities.
A lot. I mean, he respected.
Did he say anything about your work when you guys were working together?
Yeah.
Tell me, please, can you share?
He just said, you know... I never knew you could really play or you could really sing, you know. Anyway, he was an incredible human being. And I mean, he is, like my father, I said, the most artistic, incredibly gifted, one of the greatest human beings I have ever met. And he was responsible, in my mind, for changing the world and the culture as they were. I also got to play with Paul.
That's what I want. Now
later,
I want to hear.
Later,
take me
later.
To Paul McCartney, because I know we have to wrap you up. So please take me to Paul McCartney and tell me about that, the difference, or what goes on with that.
Well, I think I was recording in London. And then I was going to do a live television show. I think it was a charity show for like millions of people. Raised like 10 million, whatever it was, 100 million in Paris. And while I was there, my security people knew that Paul was there, and they were doing their last rehearsal, dress rehearsal, for the Wings Over America tour.
Yep.
And my old friend and guitar player, it was he and I together sitting there on a crate watching them do the entire show with all of the explosions and everything else that go on, the pyro and all of it. It was their last dress rehearsal. Yeah, baby, go on. Yeah, go do it, Paul. Anyway, I had met Paul before. He had a younger sister who I had spoken to Paul and Linda a few times. And anyway, he invited us to come. And then afterwards, they had their thing. I came up on the stage with my friend, who was also a great guitar player. And we just jammed for half an hour or so. And, you know, those guys grew up with Elvis and Chuck Berry and Little Richard. And those influences on both of them.
Were you able to talk to Paul?
Oh, yeah. And I've seen him a number of times since. I've had dinner with he and, you know, I've seen him a number of times. I think he's brilliant. Absolutely. Still a phenomenal singer. And, you know, if you look at his catalog of what John and he wrote together, they must be the most...
Before they throw us out of here, though, did you meet Elvis? I just was thinking, you must have met Elvis, right?
Once.
Tell me.
Last year, the Partridge Family, Elvis called me on the set of the Partridge Family.
Oh, listen, my God.
Stop it.
Our first assistant director had worked with Elvis on a couple of his films and knew him and his whatever connection, assistant or something. And he was a practical joker. Mike, this assistant, assistant director.
Yes.
His name is Chris. I won't reveal his last name to protect him.
Okay.
But I loved him. But he used to pull stunts on me all the time. So he came up to me and said, while we're working on the set, he said, Elvis is on the phone for you. And of course, I looked at him and went, yeah, right. He said, no, I'm being serious. Elvis is calling you. So I said, oh, really? In the old days, we had these old stands with, you know, telephones on them. So I stroll over there, and Chris is watching. And I go, so, Elvis, how you doing, brother? How's life in the fast lane? Yeah, well, how are your blue suede shoes now? Oh. And he started laughing. And he went, no, it really is Elvis, Davey. I'm like, yeah, right. Well, whoever you are, he said, no, honestly, my Priscilla and my daughter, Lisa, Lisa's become a big fan of yours and wants to come down and meet you. And I went, really? Okay. No problem. When would they like to come? Well, they'd like to come tomorrow. I said, fine. No problem. I look forward to meeting them. Hang up the phone like I'd just been taken, right? Still didn't believe it was him. Next day, you know what sound stages are like. They're enormous, and they have these enormous doors that open. Open the doors, and out comes this stretch limo with Priscilla and young Lisa Presley. And I'm like, oh, no. What have I done? So, of course, I took a photo. I did the whole thing, whatever you want. And I said, please, do me a favor. Let me just call
Dad.
Dad. Elvis, your father and your husband. And just apologize, because I thought Elvis had such a good sense of humor. Elvis really did have a sense of humor. He got it, because he knew Chris.
So did you get him back on the phone?
Yeah, I called him. I said, I just want to apologize. But you know Chris, he said. I had a feeling he was winding you up, more or less, which is he was trying to pull another practical joke. And because he had worked on a couple of the movies with Chris, so he kind of
Anyway. Was that the last you had talked to him?
Yeah.
Wow. Michael Jackson, you must have dealt
with
him a lot,
once
right?
or twice.
Really?
Well, once when he was with the J5, they were recording in a studio right next to me. I went in and met all the guys. And then I met him Oh, I met him with Paul McCartney, actually. He was there like
every... Oh, look at that cover. David, check this cover out. Donny Osmond, you, and Michael Jackson.
There you go. Wow.
And was there rivalries between, or did you guys admire each other, or was there rivalry between the teen idols back then?
I don't know. To be honest, I never felt any rivalry with anyone. I always...
Well, there really wasn't another David Cassidy. Do you know what I'm saying? There was never, at your time...
Yeah, well, I mean...
I mean, they were... He was 14, Donny Osmond, and they were...
And I was 19, right?
You were rock
something
and roll.
Like yeah, were, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I'd come up... Like, we were total opposites.
Yeah.
They were, you know, Mormons, and...
And you were a rock star.
And I'm like a wild, you know, wild blues guitar player.
I always wanted to ask the legends like yourself that sing these amazing songs. You know, I know Robert Plant says he doesn't like to sing his songs anymore because, like, I don't want to be a jukebox. You know, do people like you still, do you still love, the,
I love
your, do you love your old music?
I love it. And not only love it, I revere it because without it, I wouldn't still be playing and having fans all over the world that have supported me. And I was just blessed because after I stopped, I went back and began acting again. I got nominated for an Emmy.
I mean, Police Story was incredible.
Yeah, it was an amazing.
Playing an undercover policeman, I remember.
It was an amazing experience. And then I began just acting, and then I went back to Broadway. And then I started recording again in the early 80s. So I managed to use the other talents and my good fortune.
Right, to keep
starring on Broadway and then going to the West End and then having a platinum album and top five single in the UK and in Europe. And then I came back here and I began writing. I signed a publishing deal. I began writing for other artists.
Yes, I read that. Yeah.
When I re-met my ex-wife, Sue Schifrin, who is a great songwriter and a terrific musician. She and I wrote for Cher, and I mean, there was a big band in the 80s called Asia.
Of course.
And a couple of other artists that recorded our stuff and our songs. And the radio show here in L.A., morning show, Mark and Brian,
yeah,
they had heard a few of my demos that I had made at my house where she and I lived, and they invited me to come down. They played it, and I had two offers from two different record companies to go on back and start recording.
And out of the original stuff that you did, what would you do? You have a favorite? Could you say one of your songs that's your favorite?
Actually, yeah.
Which one?
It's on this album.
Oh.
It's on my David Cassidy Christmas album, okay. And I'm not kidding. A lot of my fans have said, I'm the only person to have ever recorded this song. It was written by, my favorite songwriter that I ever learned from when I was 19, 20, 21. He called me his vessel. He would write for me. He couldn't sing, but he's a brilliant writer. And it's called, the song is called My Christmas Card to You.
Pull that up so we'll go out on that, you guys.
You got it. And we recorded everything live, right? This as well, sax player for Blue Christmas and everything else. It was just Craig J. And I singing and playing this live. We stripped everything down, and so the lyric and the melody, this is it. The story of what the pictures he painted were amazing. And it's my favorite song that I've ever recorded.
Really?
Yeah, that, from that era, of course. Your neighbors and friends. We did this. I remember, like, I'm closing my eyes because we did it like 2 months ago. How awesome it is to play with him. He's just...
You know, I like... You know, your voice has it's matured.
Oh, yeah.
There's more...
grit?
Yes.
So people say it's a little smokier now.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't smoke anymore, but I think it happens from years and years and years of doing 8 shows a week, 10 shows a week, night after night, through cold and sickness, and now for the last 15 years.
But it works. I like
well,
it.
Well, I hope so.
No, creatively. Lauren, you're a musician in the booth, right? Do you hear the difference?
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I think the grit and the passion and the soul that you're bringing to it now, it's a whole nother level.
Yeah, I've heard that from people, and I really appreciate that. And when I play live, a lot of people, I've read reviews, and I don't usually do, but when they get sent to me, I think it's just so cool to play live and to record live like I did. Hundreds of tracks in the 70s and even in the 90s. Just go in with a band and play, which oftentimes I would, and sing. I play guitar in the booth and sing in the booth while the rest of the band's out there. But, you know, now with this, the technology, a lot of recording artists can't really sing. They use auto-tune.
Yeah.
You know, it's a totally different.
This is
so in my Christmas card to you and all your family, your neighbors and your friends, to the ones that make you happy and the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time, all the whole year through.
Start crying, I think.
It's beautiful.
It's really beautiful,
it's just,
David.
It's just live. That's all it is. It's he and I.
That's the heart,
in
though.
The room together, it's singing and playing.
And it really speaks to what your dad said.
Yeah,
it really
well,
does.
I thank you for that.
Oh, it really
and
does.
And everybody else who's listening, and God bless you all. I hope you have a safe and healthy and happy
holiday.
Holiday, New Year as well. I'm just really fortunate to be doing what I love to do.
I love it. And we look forward to so much more. Any, what are your celebrity friends, or do you? A lot of our celebrities come in here and say they don't have many because they're just too busy working.
I don't, I mean, I can't say I don't have any, but I have very few. Very, very few. I now live in Fort Lauderdale. I don't live in Hollywood or LA anymore. And,
awesome. I know. This is great.
It's so cool. You know, it's my band and I, and it's like we don't do, I haven't done a Christmas show, but once I think in my life, and we haven't, in the last 15 years I've been turned around, we haven't, listen to Craig, he's such an amazing keyboard player, my whole band are, they're literally prodigies. They're
great group.
Freaky talented.
Especially if they could do the different kinds of music the way they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, from rock to this.
They can do anything.
David, what's next? So what's next after this? What do you have on the, you know,
I
what's the future of David Cassidy? What
I
do
have
you got?
One more last dying wish, which I will do in 2017 at some point. It's me harmonizing with myself on my original track. Anyway,
what is the wish?
I'm going to do songs my father taught me and do it with a trio, meaning Craig and Frank Fabio is my bass player and musical director for 15 years. And
and songs that your dad, Jack, had literally taught you.
Correct. From the time I was 3, I think he, musically, he taught me so much about Gershwin, particularly Cole Porter. He sang, I can't even tell you, I think 2 different albums that Cole Porter had never recorded from musicals he had done and written that appeared on Broadway, that were in shows on Broadway that never had an original Broadway cast. He hired my father before my father, anybody knew my father. He hired him just as a singer, an Irish tenor, which my dad was. And, I mean, my dad had an amazing voice. Anyway, I learned about Cole Porter and Gershwin and Rodgers and Hart and Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Wow, so we're going way, way back on this next one.
Oh, no.
Right?
We're going to go and do a lot of the great songs. I want to do songs that everybody sings, you know, that because Sinatra recorded it. And
yeah, you know what? It is time to do a little bit of that.
Well, it's time for me to do. You remember, like in 93, I think it was, that Tony Bennett got his original trio back.
Yes.
And recorded Steppin' Out.
And he never looked back after that. Career-wise,
no kidding.
Never looked
back. Well, he's also arguably one of the greatest singers to ever live. He really is.
David, your people are going to stab me. I've got to let you go. But
God bless
you. My God, no, bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you all.
And you can find, so David Cassidy is on Twitter at David B. Cassidy. His Facebook is David-Cassidy, and it's davidcassidy.com. And his music is davidcassidymusic.com. You can download his Christmas album. It's now available on his website, iTunes.
iTunes, all of it.
Everywhere.
Hope you love it. I do.
No, we're going to love it.
We love it.
Thanks for tuning in to The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. For guest bookings, questions, or comments, you can email us at info@thetomorrowshow.com. Be sure to follow us on social media and tell a friend about the show. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, your voice of tomorrow, wishing you a better one.